Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right. For just $20, we'd read your name here or say something nice about you or your business. Just $20. Go to nerdandtie.com and find the sponsorship information on the website. This episode of Nerd and Tie is brought to you by listeners like you who have contributed to our GoFundMe campaign, which you can find more information about at GoFundMe.com/nerdandtie.
On this episode of Nerd and Tie, Wonder Woman is the highest domestic box office numbers, Spider-Man Homecoming is a thing, HBO is developing a Watchmen TV show, Bill Lord and Chris Miller are off of Han Solo, you'll never guess who's on it now, Titan FanCon tells their attendees to harass a guest who canceled, Emerald City Comic Con settles its Minions lawsuit, and more on Nerd and Tie.
Woohoo! Yay! That worked for once.
Yay! I am your hostess with the mostess, Gen Proc, and with me today are my dragon friends, Traydorn.
Heidi ho, neighbor.
And Nick Azubi.
D is for dragon.
I really hope so. Oh, so yeah, obviously we're going audio only this episode. If you're a listener, I'll see if I can upload a YouTube version for some strange reason. The five people who watch this on YouTube, but audio listeners won't have noticed.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
It's fun. This is so obviously we're very sorry that we missed a week. The studio has now been officially relocated from Lafayette, Indiana to Eau Claire, Wisconsin for production. Obviously, Nick and Gen didn't move. They are still in their respective towns, homes, nightmares. And the official production studio is still here. We're still getting the video set up working in the new office, but the audio version is... It exists again. But we had to skip a week because it was not plugged in remotely last weekend. The studio was in pieces. So
it was Independence Day.
It was, yes. America. So, you know, some of us love America and we're off celebrating America, and that's what I'm gonna claim, and you can't prove we weren't. And I will say that as it is summer, we're going to have a weird update schedule for the next couple of episodes. So in a fortnight, you're not going to get a regular episode of Nerd and Tie. In 2 weeks, you're going to get a special episode, a compilation of the secret podcasts. And then the week after that, so in 3 weeks, you'll get a news episode. So in 2 weeks, you will get something on the podcast feed. But because of timing and the fact that I'm going to be on a lake in 2 weeks, we can't record a live episode then. So we're going to do
it. Lake.
It's the annual, we're commemorating the founding of Nerd and Tie episode, which has not been annual. doing a pre-recorded special episode in celebration has not happened every year, but we're going to do it this year.
Darn straight we are.
Because of Lake.
That's how we do it in the Bronx.
Oh, but Gen, shut me up and take us into our first story.
Taking you into the world of Wonder Woman. Woo!
Which
has been doing fantastically at the box office. It has the highest box office numbers in the DCEU.
For domestic gross.
Definitely for domestic gross. I'm looking at like over 300 million.
Yes.
Domestic over the whole lifetime, which is fan frickin' tastic because it is an excellent movie. Which I have not seen yet because I'm terrible. But
oh my god, really?
Freaking good. Like, totally yeah. understand.
It, I like, do not go to movies at all ever.
Go mug someone.
Bad.
Take the contents of their wallet and run out and see it. Because, I mean, so it's 360. as of recording, it's $368 million, but that's going to keep going up domestically. And that makes it the highest grossing one in the DCEU in the domestic box office. It hasn't opened up everywhere internationally, so it's past Man of Steel in total U.S. and plus international gross, and not the other ones, but it looks on track to get even bigger.
And it again, this is the difference between this movie and those other three movies, that it actually deserves to be making that kind of money.
It is.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
It is. No. It is the 10th overall in superhero movies ever made in domestic gross.
Good.
Like the only DC movies that have made more money domestically ever are The Dark Knight. And The Dark Knight Rises. And one of those was good.
And one of those deserves to be remembered.
And then one of those seemed okay at the time. And then the more you think about it afterwards, you're like, what did I just watch? It really did become... We went through a tunnel and it became nighttime. And I didn't notice initially. So it's also the number two movie ever that's a superhero origin movie for domestic gross. The only movie that has made more of it domestically is the first Sony Spider-Man.
That seems...
For superhero origin
That seems
origin
like yesterday,
stories.
But also forever ago.
I know. That's that's two iter. That's like two Spider-Men ago. it immediately was the number one World War I movie ever for box office.
That's not surprising.
That happened initially. It is number five ever for action heroine category on Box Office Mojo, where the only things that are ahead of it are Star Wars movies and Hunger Game movies. So Force Awakens, Rogue One, and then Hunger Games and Hunger Games Catching Fire, the only female-led action movies that have grossed more domestically.
So I think Warner Brothers' big takeaway from this is going to be...
Obviously...
Is that
more
if they
Batman.
Want to make more money...
Clearly the reason why the film made money is because Batman emailed her at the beginning of the film.
Right.
Like, that is clearly the only reason.
Well, obviously the best options are to do that, or, you know, the other option, which is the next movie, have Wonder Woman be a hungry Jedi. And then it'll make all the money.
Oh, yes, of course. But, it's Wonder Woman is just kicking the ass out of everything. I mean, this is, I know Justice League is still going to happen. But is there, do you think there's a possibility there is a light at the end of this tunnel of the DC Carnival of Sadness?
Well, we found the one good ride so far. So
yeah.
Maybe,
guys, everything else is broken, but the Tilt-A-Whirl works.
Yeah, basically, that's where I'm at right now. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's hope.
Well,
they're probably going to be drastically reshooting stinking Justice League anyway. I think it's going to be a tonal cluster boink, but...
Yeah, I'm not counting on Justice League being good. But that's also a remnant of the... So it's like, you know what, the one thing that, like, Zack Snyder doesn't really like superheroes?
What gives you that impression?
But that's why I think that's been the problem with all this. Like, Patty Jenkins genuinely loves Wonder Woman. And,
mm-hmm.
The one thing that, like... It's the same reason why... the same reason why I love Guardians of the Galaxy movies, although I don't really count Guardians of the Galaxy movies as superhero movies. Those are space opera in a superhero universe. The reason is just that it's not cynical. And this is actually, this is true of a lot of the reason why the MCU's really worked is because it's not a cynical franchise, and it is made with sincerity. Like, they don't, you know, it's like there are valid criticisms that can be made to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But the one thing it gets it right is the fact that it's very sincere. Like, it's not done, like, it's not really a cynical take. Like, it knows it's superhero movies, and it firmly embraces that. Even the Iron Man films, like, where you've got potentially a character, you know, with Tony Stark's, with Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark, of, like, being a bad writer could potentially take that character and make him too cynical, or, you know what I mean, or, like, sarcastic about the premise. But, like, it's just a genuine, and I think that's, like, this is, Wonder Woman is the first DC film we've really gotten that takes it sincerely. We've gotten sincere Batman movies with, like, I really think the Batman, like, the Nolan's, the first two Batman movies are good in Nolan's trilogy. The third one. But all three of those movies, regardless of quality, were made, like, with this, like, there's no one's, like, feeling snide about Batman existing. Like, the strengths of Nolan's trilogy.
I think
there's
a little bit of cynicism there. I do think there's a little bit of cynicism in the Dark Knight films, but I think there's still enough respect to what Batman means.
Well, there's
as
definitely
a cultural
cynicism.
Icon.
There's definitely cynicism towards Robin, and so. Mm-hmm. But that's, I think that's why the first movie is the strongest, and then it goes downhill from there, because the earlier parts of Batman's story, Nolan liked, and then he didn't like the full finished product, and so. But either way, like, the reason why Batman Begins is so sincere is because, like, the reason why Batman Begins works is because it is sincere. That's the reason why. And then in the DC Extended Universe, you know, with Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, it was made by people who did not really like Superman or a truly sincere character like that. And so that's why those films failed in their production. Like, that, like,
well, it even goes to show, like, have you read some of the interviews with Zack Snyder where he says insane things like, well, I tried to get into comic books that weren't Watchmen, but I always looked at them like, no one's getting killed, no one's having sex. How am I supposed to take this seriously? That's how he actually phrased it. It wasn't If it doesn't have murder or sex in it, he can't take it seriously. His words, not mine.
And that is why, arguably, Watchmen's his best comic book work.
Mm-hmm. I don't think
actually
it's a good
it.
Work, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah. So my point is that, you know, and is that Wonder Woman is, like, sincere, and it's good, and it doesn't suck. Well, Suicide Squad didn't have to be sincere. It just failed on every other level. Like, that's the only movie that you could make with characters who don't, like, sincerely like it, because it's a bunch of villains forced to, like, do stuff for the government. Like, those people, you don't want those characters to be sincere. Which is actually why I feel like they fucked up Deadshot a little bit. But... Because they tried to make Will Smith... Because he was Will Smith, so they tried to make him likable. Which is a mistake.
I was about to say, Deadshot is someone who kills people for money. It's the reason I was worried about casting Will Smith in the first place. You take a character whose entire shtick is he kills people for money, and then you make it someone who sweats charisma play it.
No, but it's even that. Like, the way they wrote the character with the backstory, he's doing it all for his daughter, and No, just make him a dick.
Mm-hmm.
They did it really well in Arrow.
Arrow did it well. The animated Suicide Squad movie did it well.
Yeah, but
pretty doable is what I'm saying.
But so yeah, to get around the point, you know, Wonder Woman. Yay! I'm waving my arms back and forth. I'm realizing this isn't a video episode, so my being physically animated is in no way helpful. But I am still waving my arms around. And
it's worthy of the arm waving.
Yes.
I want everyone at home to know that.
Yeah.
Especially
so,
you, Mikey.
So, speaking of sincerity, and as we mentioned previously, Spider-Man, Spider-Man Homecoming came out this weekend. It was a movie. I saw it. I'm going to give you my thoughts. First off, which is why I should have shut up more during the Wonder Woman part, because you're about to hear a bunch of my voice. So Spider-Man Homecoming came out this weekend, and oh my god, for the first time since Spider-Man 2, we have a Spider-Man movie that I walked out of completely happy about. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like some of the Andrew Garfield. I actually kind of like the Andrew Garfield movies and was totally okay with them, even the second one, which wasn't that great. But I spent both of those movies waiting for a main character to die. In the Andrew Garfield movies, the first one with Uncle Ben and the second one with Gwen Stacy. Like, spoiler alert, Gwen Stacy dies. That just...
I guess it doesn't really matter anymore since that story's not going to go anywhere.
Well... That's just spoiler alert for the comics. Gwen Stacy died.
oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, well, I mean, alternate universe Gwen Stacy is...
I'm not reading some books from the 60s yet. Yeah.
Did she die in the 60s or the 70s?
Anyway, there are a couple decades
so,
behind. That's
okay, so Spider-Man Homecoming. We've got a high school-aged Spider-Man, which he hasn't been in high school since, like, year two of the comics. But whatever. because that was... Like, he got out of high school back when Marvel was actually trying to do real time before they switched to the sliding time scale. Like,
that's because if they kept doing real time, everyone would be Captain America by now.
Right. It's well, it all goes back to the fact that Marvel didn't like Marvel had to like it was during Sue Richards' pregnancy, Sue Storm's pregnancy with Franklin that the time scale started shifting because their stories took so long that like she was pregnant for like a really long time. But that's Marvel. But besides my, you know, I mean, yes, it is true that it is a high school age Spider-Man story. And for most of us who grew up reading Spider-Man, Spider-Man was not in high school. So it's, I keep waiting for the franchise keeps rebooting every time we get him into like adult Spider-Man, because I mean, I'm in my 30s. So my Spider-Man growing up was adult married Spider-Man, like Spider-Man married to Mary Jane, like. And I stopped reading Spider-Man with when they had the whole like marriage erased from the timeline thing when that happened. Like that's when I was like, okay, I'm screw you, Joe Quesada. I'm done with Spider-Man books. But but my Spider-Man is like a professional adult, married professional adult. You know, that's a Spider-Man. And so yes, it is a movie where we have yet again another iteration of high school Spider-Man, but. For once, it was a high school Spider-Man who I actually liked. And it was a high school-age Spider-Man who actually looked like a high schooler. which is because he's actually, like, playing a character he's within a few years of the age of when they shot it. Versus every other Spider-Man who was a good, like, decade older than the character in their high school scenes. But
my favorite part of that is in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, the first one, yeah. Where... like all of the kids at the school look older than their teachers.
Yeah.
That always kills me.
Yeah.
Every time.
So to avoid spoilers, I will say that while it looked like the trailer had given away the whole plot of the film, it did not. There's a major element that they managed to keep out of that. I'm not going to spoil it. So it's... Like, and it took me, like, I don't know why it took me by surprise. I should have pieced it together, but it took me by surprise, but it wasn't like a, this feels out of left field. It was a more of a, oh, I should have seen that coming. But so Uncle Ben is so dead before the film that they never say his name.
Good.
There's no flashback to it. there's, like, that was my concern. It's not that, like, I knew Uncle Ben would be dead before the movie started, but, like, I was afraid of, like, a flat, like, a pearls hitting the ground scene, like, you know, we get in every Batman first movie, every time they reboot that franchise. But there's not. There's no scene. There's no reference. The only reference to Peter's origin is at one point he, like, in a clip of when, because it's in the trailers that his friend finds out that he's Spider-Man, that his friend Ned finds out. And there's kind of a montage of Ned quizzing him and asking him questions. And the most we get out of it is Ned saying, "So you got bit by a spider?" And he went, "Yes." And then Ned asks him, "The spider bite me?" And Peter goes, "The spider's dead, Ned." Like, that's
funny.
That's the whole origin we get. And, like, oh, and they also, like,
but
say,
honestly, at
like,
this point,
Aunt May's been through a lot this year.
Origin.
Like, well, no, it's like, you can't make this movie if it were, this is a movie that it was made because we've gotten two versions of his origin in the last 15 years. And so, like, there has been a Spider-Man movie every 2.5 years, approximately.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you need to learn, like, no one needs to know Spider-Man's origin.
Right.
No one doesn't know it already. It's why we can stop seeing pearls hitting the ground, because everyone knows Batman's origin by now.
Yeah,
my grandpa
DC
hates
will
comic
Warner
books.
Bros. Will always show
Batman's
us
Batman's origin.
Yeah, but so that's the good news, is that we don't have our "with great power comes great responsibility" moment. You know, Uncle Ben's last words. Which, you know, it's a really good lesson and an important part of the character. But honestly, have you ever thought about, like, how weird it is that he's just randomly telling Peter that? In the Spider-Man origin?
Well,
like, if you know that Peter has superpowers, it makes sense to tell him. But why does fortune cookie Uncle Ben always, like, spouting off this wisdom? Like, have you
Peter
ever thought about
tell
how...
you that with great power comes great responsibility? I think about that a lot.
Yeah. Peter, this is a very powerful saw. You know, but with great power comes great responsibility. Don't cut your fingers off. Like...
Just throwing that out there.
This is a 220 line, Peter. And with great electrical power comes great electrical responsibility. Like, that's just, like, I've it literally just occurred to me how weird it is that, like, that particular piece of advice is what he said. Like, because he just thought Peter was going to the library. Like, what the heck? Or, you know, whatever. But anyways, Homecoming,
in the event that you secretly decide to, you know, fight in a cage match, you should know that with great power comes great.
You're wrestling, when you're wrestling with superpowers, and some
that
guy's robbing the management of the wrestling league, remember that with great power comes great responsibility, because if you don't stop that guy, he's going to kill me. It's... I don't know. Spider-Man's origin is weird when you really think about some of it. But I do love the fact that we can believe a Peter Parker. We can believe in a Peter Parker who created web fluid all on his own, but can't sew. Sewing is the one superpower this Peter Parker doesn't have. Every other Peter Parker was able to sew a nice suit. This Peter Parker did not take home ec.
Counterpoint, there's no way that someone with his, who is as impoverished as Tobey Maguire or Tom Holland are, would be able to get the supplies they would need to sew a costume of that sort of complexity. I don't believe it. I don't believe it for a second. Furthermore, as a cosplayer, I'm good at making props. I couldn't sew anything that good.
You saying you couldn't buy a morph suit and dye it?
There is no way that the Spider-Man costume that they wear in any of those movies is a dyed morph.
Well, no. I'm not saying the movie costumes. I'm saying the comic costume.
Oh, the comic costume. I could probably do that.
Right. That's what I'm saying. This is what
I'm saying. By 20 minutes, I mean a week, but you know what I mean.
Gang keeps looking like she's going to say something and then leans back, and it's funny. Yeah, because even though we're not doing video, we're still video connected to each other. So we can all see each other, even if you can't see us. But, okay, so Spider-Man Homecoming, which I'm supposed to be giving you a review of right now, I'm just going to say that this movie is great. It is the first Spider-Man movie I've seen since Spider-Man 2 where I've enjoyed the entire film from beginning to end because I wasn't dreading anything. Like, you really take for granted, I know that there are a lot of people who maybe didn't know the comics, who didn't know about Gwen Stacy's death, although, you know, like...
Ow.
Well, there are people who just don't read comics and don't read comic forums who are casual moviegoers who would go see a Spider-Man movie. I mean, think about it. If you'd only seen Sam Raimi's movies, the only reason you'd know the name Gwen Stacy is because she's in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's... So seeing, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect her then to die in Amazing Spider-Man 2. But if you're a comic book reader, you definitely expect her to die in Spider-Man 2 because that's what Gwen Stacy's there for in a Spider-Man story, unless we're getting like Spider-Gwen, like, you know, a version where Peter Parker's going to die. I don't know what Gwenpool's story is, so I can't make a comment about it.
I can answer that.
Okay.
It's an alternate universe Gwen Stacy who reads comics and finds herself in the Marvel Universe, which she concludes can't possibly be real, so that means that there are no consequences to her decisions.
Okay.
Yep. I didn't say it was good.
Okay.
I said it's a thing.
Well, Spider-Gwen happened because of a good story idea. Gwenpool happened because someone thought the costume would look good.
Because money.
Yeah.
Because think about Gwen Stacy with pink highlights, who's also Deadpool. Worked for Spider-Man.
Right, except, like, Spider-Gwen, like, that whole story, like, makes sense because it's a really interesting alternate take on what could have happened.
Also, she has, like, the coolest Spider-Man costume.
Oh, my God, right? Like, have you ever seen the original design that she was supposed to have before?
I don't think
like,
I did.
Because Spider-Man actually took several years to get off the ground. And so the original writer who came up with the concept, his notes for the costume were lost. And then so the artist came back with a costume and sent it to him, and it was totally not what he wanted, but it was just so cool. The original costume that they wanted to do for Spider-Gwen, as described by the writer, was, like, based off the outfit that Gwen Stacy died in, with, like, a trench coat.
No.
A terrible idea. Yeah, no, so we all got lucky there. Just to kind of wrap up the Spider-Man thing, because I want to avoid spoilers, it's solid, it's fun, it's light, it feels very integrated into the MCU. That shot you saw in the trailer of Iron Man flying next to Spider-Man swinging is not in the movie remotely and was literally created for the trailer because the movie studios asked that they have a shot with both of them in costume, and the only shots they had of both of them in costume didn't look cool. So they just literally rendered that out to have a cool-looking shot with the two of them. Because, yes, there are moments in the film where Tony Stark is in his Iron Man armor, and there, you know, and Spider-Man is Spider-Man, but that is seen as not one of them.
Ha!
Which is why, if you were watching that trailer and said, wow, that shot seems really trailery, like, that feels really weird. Like, I don't know how that would fit into a movie. It's because it never did. It was never part of the movie. But overall, this is very much a good Spider-Man movie. It just, you know, every 2.5 years, Spider-Man for the last 15 years. on average.
Don't worry, I'm sure the MCU will continue the great tradition of finding a way to reboot Spider-Man.
So in 5 years, we're due for another one on average. A new Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know. We'll just have a different... It'll be like, oh no! Like, by defeating Thanos, the Time Stone has reset Peter Parker back to high school.
Oh, man. Speaking of out-of-continuity remakes no one was asking for.
Nice.
So, yeah. So, maybe not nobody. So, HBO has announced that they are developing a live-action television series, or rather Damon Lindelof is helping them develop a live-action television series based on Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' seminal comic Watchmen. As we already mentioned, Zack Snyder already made a run at Watchmen. Most people seem to like it pretty well. You know, I accept that I'm better than everyone else in one of these situations. No,
it's in many ways as good as you're going to get for a Watchmen movie.
Yeah,
if you're going to try to cram that dense of a story into a feature film length, I can't think of a better way to make it.
That said, maybe I think Watchmen was better suited for a miniseries kind of feel, honestly.
I agree.
That's how I felt about it for a while. And so I'm kind of excited for this TV series thing.
I'm excited for it. I'm a little cautious about Damon Lindelof because he comes from the J.J. Abrams school of storytelling. I mean, like, think about the things he's made, Lost. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Which had I'm in the minority of people who really liked the way Lost ended. Like I fully enjoyed Lost from beginning to end.
Okay.
I think that it works much better as a binge watching show because there is, I think it's either the second or third season just drags on forever. But if you watch it like three episodes at a time, it doesn't feel like it drags forever. But I can see, like, if you were watching it, like, watch an hour a week, it would be really... It's like, you know how, like, the second season of The Walking Dead would have been boring as crap to watch on television, but can be entertaining binge-watched?
Like, I'll take your word for it on that one.
Yeah, it's, I really like it. I mean, well, because the secret to the, like, this is completely aside, but the secret to The Walking Dead season two is that, they had their funding cut while having more episodes ordered. So they had to find a way to save money, and they saved money by sitting on that farm for a really long time. But doing nothing. But anyways, Watchmen, like... So Damon Lindelof, the only reason would be concerned is because sometimes his stuff can meander. But he does have source material in this stuff. Like, the problem with Lost is that they were making it up as they went and had to tie together a story, and this is a situation where he'd have a blueprint.
And again, I feel like being able to spend more time with these characters is important, and I feel putting it with someone who's going to value character development and dialogue over action sequences. Like, that's when you really break it down. And what I didn't do well in pretty much every other time I've attempted to review Watchmen is to try to sum it up with any semblance of brevity. And I guess if I'm going to do that, the easiest way to say it is that Watchmen is not an action piece.
No,
and
it's
it
not.
Shouldn't be an action
it
piece.
Shouldn't.
And that's my problem with Zack Snyder's version, is that it's an action movie. It takes scenes that in the comic are dirty and ugly fights and turns them into these over the top, hell yeah, bro, fight scenes for frat boys to high five each other.
Well, it's because Zack Snyder completely misunderstood the source material, and also, but I will say that, like, it's what he did very well was kind of capturing, frames of moments, and that's what Zack Snyder does best, is capturing that 20-second moment. Again, have you read Watchmen?
I've not read it, at least not for a long, long time. I may have glanced at it in high school, but I do remember the film.
Okay.
You need a co- I have an extra copy if you'd like to borrow one, because
I should borrow it and reread it.
it's worth reading and it's worth remembering. It really is a good book.
Okay, but again, have you seen the movie though?
Yeah, a couple times.
So this is my question, because like I obviously Nick and I both saw the movie having read the graphic novel first, or the was the movie easy? Were you able to follow the movie easily? That is my question.
No.
Right, because and that's
Not at all. I was just like, wait, who's this guy? This is the bad guy?
yes,
Oh.
Blue Penis,
Okay.
and
Why is he blowing up now? Okay, cool.
yeah.
Sure. Yeah, it was like without knowing the source material at all, it's really, really hard to understand and get
Yeah.
really excited about.
Yeah, because it is that is exactly what I suspected, because like I had read the graphic novel. Krista had read the like everyone I saw that movie with had read the story before, so we all knew what was going on. And so I think that's the big problem with Zack Snyder's film is that like I don't see how anyone who didn't read Watchmen would have been able to watch that. And like I feel bad for David Hayter, who wrote the script, who had to like that's right, Solid Snake wrote the script. Look it up. I'm not kidding. The voice of
He
Solid
didn't just
Snake.
single-handedly defeat a Gundam with a Zaku. He also writes scripts.
Yeah,
That's
yeah. The
pretty
voice of
amazing.
Solid Snake wrote the script for Watchmen. And like I'll say like the strongest point of the entire film is the historical montage at the beginning of the movie. Like that is the best part of the
I agree.
Watchmen.
Yeah.
But like cuz the genius of Watchmen is that it tells the story in so many different ways. It doesn't just give like yes, there's the central narrative told through the regular comic panels, but there are interstitial moments where you get I mean, besides the fact that there are characters who like have entire like side stories unrelated to the main plot, just to give you the texture of this alternate world, where superhero comics weren't popular, and so you got the kid reading the comic outside the newsstand, who's reading the pirate comics, which pirate comics, of course, are the popular form of, you know, comic books in a universe where superheroes are everywhere. But you get like articles and snippets from like autobiographies and just like all of this like background information between chapters of the book.
It seems more
And
like a bit of a scrapbook feel.
right, it does. It's exactly
Whereas
what they were going for.
you can't get that in a film. You just
Right.
can't.
Right. And so like if you read like ha if you get like half an article and you can read that, suddenly you get like 10 details about the world that you know then going into the next chapter of the
Yep.
book. And so like it informs the reader on stuff that then doesn't have to be explained in the primary narrative. And when you lose all that supplemental material and you make that film, like I can see a TV series working because like just to bring it back to the actual topic at hand, I can see a TV series working because you can do like interstitial like newsreels instead, clips to documentaries. Like there are ways to
Yeah.
do it that would be too much time filler in a movie. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
you can't do like, but you could do if you're doing like, you know, I don't know how long HBO episodes are because I don't have HBO. Like, whether they go full 60 minutes or a standard 42. But, like, you can do 5 minutes of a 42-minute episode dedicated to, like, you know, clips from, like, pseudo-document, fake documentaries and things like that that you can't do in a 2.5-hour movie. That, you know what I mean? Like, you can't,
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
you can't
It's a
cut
time
from the
thing.
narrative. You can't cut from the narrative in a 2.5-hour movie, also, for pacing. While in a TV show, because you have natural cutoff and endpoints, because even on a network like HBO with no commercials, you still have like there is a natural beginning and endpoint to the episode, like there is with a comic issue. Because Watchmen, while we refer to it as a graphic novel and effectively as a self-contained story, was published in standard comic issues that went out to the, you know, the newsstands, you know, and the...
And it reads like, it's very episodic.
Yeah.
It already, I mean, hell, the, a few years back, they did a motion comic of Watchmen. And each of the chapters were released as episodes, which worked because it was just like, oh, look, it's a little animated thing. Yeah.
And so, and I know that there's the whole before Watchmen comics that they might work in, but
don't do that.
Oh,
don't.
They will.
I'm begging you, HBO, don't do that.
They will. It's Damon Lindelof. He can't help himself.
But I'm begging them. I mean, what did I do to deserve this?
But, you know, it is what it is, man. It's, I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic, you know, and this is not connected to, I know in 2014, I think they were working on an Watchmen series that would have been connected to Snyder's film. And this is unrelated to that. Well, it's, yeah.
Why would you want that?
Well, to be fair, it has its fan base. You know, that film does have its fan base.
They're all wrong. That's just something they have to live with.
You know, it's interesting because we were talking about before sincerity and cynicism and how every, you know, like Zack Snyder wanted everything to be like Watchmen. You know, it wasn't more than sex, but like, it's like Watchmen. It's interesting because like, I don't know if we're still in the moment in history where Watchmen is important anymore. Like,
that's
true. Watchmen was an important text when it came out because it came out in a world of like earnest, like there was still grimdark stuff happening in superheroes, but it was a much more, like, with the exception of some of the Batman stuff happening, it was still a very, like, you know, earnest, you know, sincere world of comics. And so by writing a cynical story, you stood out, like you were the antithesis of that. But the problem is that between that and Dark Knight Returns, between Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns, we had a generation of comics fans where, because those two sold really well and were critically acclaimed, every comic written after that tried to ape the cynicism and darkness and grit of those comics. And suddenly anything that wasn't those wasn't, you know, deemed, you know, adult. And so, but I think that because we've been through, you know, 20, 30 years of these comics that are like of that kind of book and that kind of, and what happened is then all the movies adapted from those then tend to like, look, I mean, just honestly look at any Batman movie, you know, like there have been Batman animated series that ape a better, like what I believe to be a better version of Batman, like especially the Batman the Animated Series, you know, that a lot of us grew up with. I mean, like,
well, like it's kind of like taking it back even further. It's like why we're never going to see an adaptation of the Scarlet Pimpernel ever again.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, yes, that was really the first story to feature a mysterious caped masked man, you know, fighting crime with a secret identity. But, you know, then there was Zorro and then there was Batman, you know. So,
yeah.
All of those things are derivative from that. But when you've only lived in that derivative, the original kind of loses its luster by comparison.
Well, but that's why I think that, like, so in film adaptations and in television adaptations, I feel like Marvel has moved beyond that cynical mm-hmm. ways. Like, I think even, like, Fox's movies started trying to still, like, keep it grounded when they launched with the first X-Men movie, you know, 17 years ago or whatever. But I feel like Marvel's MCU has kind of embraced the sincerity and started to spin pendulum. And even DC's TV shows have embraced sincerity, and Wonder Woman embraced sincerity, much to, you know, wonderfulness. But, like, I feel like the rest of the DCEU, the problem, like, those films have had, and that's why I'm worried about Justice League, is that they are still trapped in that mindset of elevating Watchmen and elevating not necessarily... And I don't want to say that Watchmen is a work of genius. It's just mm-hmm. that elevating the what made Watchmen a work of genius is not the fact that it had a cynical tone. Mm-hmm. It's that it was good and had a like and having a cynical tone helped it stand out at the time, but Watchmen's held up because it was a good text.
Maybe the violence, the sex, and the cynicism wasn't what made it great, is what
right,
I think
exactly.
you're getting at.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So Watchmen TV show. It's
I want it to be good, but yeah, now this whole conversation has made me.
Yeah. Hey, again, speaking of things we want to be good.
Yeah. So we all know that sometime in the future, there's going to be a Han Solo movie coming. What we don't know is how it's going to get here because it turns out that Phil Lord and Chris Miller are no longer directing the film due to literal creative differences. They even said, we don't like to use the phrase, but, for once, it's true. Creative differences on this project. And so they decided to part ways with that.
Decided.
Yeah. Well, someone decided. It might not have
someone
been
someone decided. But, interestingly enough, a new director has been chosen, as I find article.
It's Opie.
Ron Howard is
little Opie Cunningham
taking over.
Okay.
Yeah, Ron Howard is going to be slated to direct the Han Solo film.
Or at least finish the mess. Cause,
right?
Because they've been shooting since February. Let's keep this in perspective here.
Most of it should be done by now.
This is going to come out spring of next year.
Yeah.
That's the expected release date.
There are only a few weeks left in the production schedule.
I was not big on this movie in the first place.
Who asked for this movie? We got Han Solo's origins.
Star Wars. Hot mess.
You want to see Han Solo's origin? Go watch A New Hope.
Right?
He was a dick. That's all I need.
Yeah. what's the movie? Because the first A New Hope is him learn his story arc in A New Hope is he starts out as a dick and then ends the movie as kind of less of a dick. So this is going to be a movie of how Han Solo became a dick?
Fine.
I mean, let's
looking forward to it.
So this movie has had problems. This whole production. They sent their lead actor had to get sent to acting classes halfway through filming, and the theory is just that because the actor actually has been in other stuff and did a good job. I can't pronounce his name, so I'm not going to say it. But you can all look it up. But it's the going theory is just that he wasn't acting enough like Harrison Ford. So, so he wasn't believably young Harrison Ford. But, okay, so Phil Lord and Chris Miller are best known for, they directed the Lego movie. They created the TV series Last Man on Earth, which is phenomenal. And the canceled far too soon Making History, which I actually genuinely enjoyed. It was really stupid, but I really liked it, that show. But so Phil Lord and Chris Miller they've done good work. Last Man on Earth and the Lego Movie, just those two things on their own, stand up really well.
They were the only reason I cared about this movie.
So the problem,
honestly.
So the problem is, and I think this is a they've been clashing with the studio since the beginning on this film. So I mean it's you have to think of, the Star Wars movies are effectively being treated the same way the MCU is treated effectively like a TV series. This isn't a world where directors get complete say. This isn't a world where, in a normal, director-studio director studio relationship, the director gets way more creative freedom because they're fitting it into a pre-existing. Kathleen Kennedy's word is God. And so really what's happening with Lawrence Kasdan writing this thing, Lawrence Kasdan kept getting really mad at Chris Miller, the Phil Lord and Chris Miller, because they kept going off script. They kept going off script. Phil Lord and Chris Miller kept going off, like, letting actors improvise, changing things up. And when... Now, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad... Like, I don't know if it says good, it, like, that... If it says that there's something positive about the production that they are so wanting it to fit into the continuity for fans, or if it's a bad thing that they're not letting the film be something than other than it's not. Like, it's... We saw the same kind of, like, it didn't result in anyone getting fired for Rogue One, but we did see the same level of creative, like, oversight and, like control from the studio for Rogue One. And I think in that case, it worked out really well. Rogue One ended up being a pretty phenomenal film. I think we can all agree.
It's like, it's probably my second, it's close to my second or third favorite Star Wars film, honestly.
Yeah, it's, I like it, I like it better than the special edition of Jedi, for sure. I don't know if I, like, we all agree that it's good. It's, I have, like, I parse this, like, because special edition of Jedi is way worse than the original version of Jedi. Which I should be clear that, like, say, special edition of Empire, I think, is as good as the regular edition of Empire because they didn't mess with the story structure in Empire in the special editions. It's I prefer watching the original cut, but I can watch the special edition of Empire and be perfectly happy because Empire's the
best. I prefer my potato asteroids. Thank you very much.
But in any case, so that's the one concern, is that the only thing the Han Solo film really, like, the main thing it had going for it was just that it was going to maybe be like a lighter toned romp film, you know, because we had a very serious war movie with Rogue One. I don't mind. And so I guess the only concern is that they're going to try to make, because if you're not doing funny, like, what is the point in making a Han Solo prequel movie? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, why would you even hire Miller and Lord in the first place if you don't want funny?
Well, I think it's because they were just defiant to the studio. I think that this is really the, based on kind of the, like, I've done a little bit of research on this, and it really seems like they'd been warned not to do stuff, and they kept doing it. Like, Kathleen Kennedy would say, or Lawrence Kasdan would say, don't do X. And then they'd immediately go do X. Like, so they were like, and that's why, you know, so now we've been told that, like, we've been told, I haven't told, I've read, no one told me, someone told a different news source that actually has sources in Lucasfilm, and then I went and read that it sounds like they actually were, like, shooting takes with the real lines and then would, like, do tons of alternate takes. So, like, there is a good chance that there's good footage. Ron Howard is frankly coming on board because they all know him. And Ron Howard is a director best described as competent.
Houston, we have a problem.
Like, can you pick a Ron Howard film that was truly great since Apollo 13? No.
That's the only Ron Howard film I could even think of offhand, to be fair.
I can't think of any, so.
Really?
I mean, honestly, I mean, just a second.
That's like,
there's
the Google.
What other movies did he even do?
I'm just going to double check that I'm right before. Yeah,
is he directing The Dark Tower?
Cocoon.
What?
Cocoon. Oh yeah, he was one of the people attached to direct the Dark Tower at one point. Everyone was attached to direct the Dark Tower at some point in history.
I was attached to direct the Dark Tower at one point.
But dude, Cocoon.
Cocoon. I didn't see that.
Well, I mean, it's been out since 1975, man.
Yeah, well, I haven't gotten around to it yet. I'm too busy watching classics like Gamera versus Geron.
I mean,
for the seventh time.
Have you ever seen Splash? Willow? Willow? I love Willow. Willow.
Jesus. Willow, yeah, but he also directed the live-action Grinch movie.
But he also directed Backdraft.
Frost Nixon. That was recent and good.
A Beautiful Mind, which he won an Academy Award for.
He did Arrested Development.
And then he did all of the Da Vinci Code movies. All of them.
All those weird
Dan
Brown movies.
Like, did you even know that they made an Inferno movie?
I did. But that's because I have a special deep-seated hatred for Dan Brown.
Like, I mean,
he made going to my high school a huge pain in my ass.
Did Dan Brown beat you up in high school?
No, I was a devout Catholic in high school, and thanks to Dan Brown, everyone, half the people I talked to believed that I was some conspiracy theory keeping, self-flagellating person who accused me of keeping all sorts of secrets that if they read a goddamn history book, they would know weren't secrets at all. It's just that Dan Brown knows Americans are too stupid to know anything about church history, so he acted like it was some big conspiracy.
Wait, the people in your high school thought that an average Catholic person on the street would know about the conspiracies proposed by Dan Brown books?
Yes, they did.
Have you considered that you just went to high school with really stupid people that has nothing to do with Dan Brown?
Can't it be both?
I mean,
can't Dan Brown still be a shitty writer, which, by the way, he is?
I've never read any of his books, so I can't.
Well, you're doing yourself a favor in not doing so.
Well, the good news is that Lawrence Kasdan wrote this movie and not Dan Brown. Assuming Lawrence Kasdan did write this movie. You know, this Han Solo movie doesn't even have a name yet.
Yeah, that's another. This is it. This is going to be Disney's. You know, I don't want to call it like that. I almost called it like that, but this just feels like this is going to be Disney's first Star Wars turd. Like, I'm sorry. There's nothing is making me excited about this.
The Han Solo movie.
I forgot it was even happening. Like, that's how excited I was.
Oh, well.
Exactly.
It's coming out. Right. It's going to be the first Star Wars movie that comes out in May. So it's
going to be it's going to be the first Star Wars movie since the Clone Wars pilot that I'm not going to give a crap about.
I'm going to care. Yeah, Lawrence Kasdan wrote the movie with John Kasdan. Okay, good.
I want to care. I want to care. I really do.
Lawrence Kasdan. I want to see the movie about Lawrence Kasdan writing this movie with his son.
And
that's the movie I want to see. Not the actual movie. No,
is it going to be anything like when Hayao Miyazaki reviewed his son's theatrical debut? When Gorō Miyazaki directed a adaptation of Ursula Le Guin's Tales of Earthsea, and Hayao Miyazaki said it's crap, no one should watch it.
Oh, Jesus. No.
Ursula Le Guin said more or less the same.
Yeah, but, you know,
he's still very much alive, by the way.
You know, It's one of those things where usually you'd be nice to your kid.
Nope.
Right.
Like, that's just mean. Oh. Stupid thing. You know, speaking of being mean.
Oh, boy.
Because that's the best segue I could come up with today. And maybe yelling at people. You know, there's a convention in this world called Titan Fan Con. If you've never heard of it, that's okay, because it's a con in Odessa, Texas. And why would you ever go to Odessa, Texas? Unless you were really wanted to see how inaccurate heroes represented that area of the state. Anyways, Titan Fan Con is a small comic convention that ran a couple weeks ago in Odessa, Texas. It's one of the myriads of cons that dot the American countryside, and pretty much we wouldn't give a... Well, I mean, we'd care about in the sense that we always care about conventions, but wouldn't be the sort of thing we'd bother talking about on the show if it weren't for the fact that they did something tremendously stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, at the show, actor Seth Gilliam was slated to appear as a guest of honor. Seth Gilliam is an actor who is on The Walking Dead. He plays Gabriel on The Walking Dead. The actor had to cancel his appearance. And this is, anytime you book a working actor for your convention, be they a person who does regular acting or voice acting, that is always the risk that your convention, that something's going to come up in their schedule and they're not going to be able to appear. It's just always a risk you take. And frankly, actors from The Walking Dead have like the biggest reputation for canceling on cons. Because Norman Reedus is like a legend for just like canceling half his appearances. Like, you know, it's so... It's not like something that the convention should necessarily... I mean, like, it's something that they should have been prepared for as a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's a known risk when you bring in working media celebrities. When Titan FanCon announced this cancellation, though, they didn't exactly handle it, you know, in the best way. In a now-deleted post to the con's official Facebook page, they posted, and I'm going to quote here, "We were made aware by Seth Gilliam's management, despite all obligations being fulfilled, Gilliam could not make the trip out to the show. We wish he was able to, but this is all we know at this point. Please feel free to contact his personal Twitter at the Seth Gilliam. While we do our best every show to ensure appearances, we do apologize." So that's right. Instead of just a, "We're sad to announce that X celebrity will not be appearing at the show anymore," they made sure to say that we met our obligations, and he said, "No, go tell, you know, go contact him. Feel free to contact the guest." Now, while it's true that they used like a public point of contact for the guest, a verified Twitter account, and not like his personal email or something, effectively, What they were saying was that they were really just kind of pointing and saying, "It's not our fault, go blame him. Like, mm-hmm. we did all of our stuff and he just canceled on it." Like,
can you believe that?
Now, Seth Gilliam, of course, responded a few hours after they posted this, with a post saying, "To the folks who are disappointed, I'm not in Texas this weekend as I should have been. I wanted to go to Odessa, but there was a change in my schedule, and they wouldn't pay for a change in my flight, even though I offered to repay them immediately for the change." So what happened was, his schedule changed. He couldn't make the flight that they had booked. He would have said he would require a different plane flight, and said he would cover the costs, you know, afterwards. The guest offered to pay for the difference in the cost. He just couldn't, you know, obviously buy the tickets for the con. So what really happened here was that the guest had a scheduled shift, tried to still make it happen, and the con made a whiny piss baby post about go blame the guest. Jifka. JFC.
I don't even.
Like, how unprofessional can you get?
I was going to say, like, I wish there was, like, some way to just, like, take convention staffers and just, like...
shake them violently?
Here, That and like just shove them into a course on professionalism. Like, come on. Stop being so childish.
Why can't cons do basic PR? This is my question. Honest to God, why can't cons do basic PR?
Right? The better PR you do, the better your con does. Like,
no. We're just, yeah, I...
And also, man, if you are running a con and you want guests to appear, if you're a guest, if you're a person who does convention appearances, be you a media celebrity, comic book artist, anything, if you do appearances at conventions and you see that a con kind of, you know, almost like this is, I don't want to necessarily say that this is an invitation for harassment, but I'm certain that some people would have taken it that way. Like, if you are a potential guest, would you be willing to book a con that does this on the off chance you've got a schedule shift?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just, that's, it makes all of us look bad.
Yeah.
I don't even run cons anymore, and I feel like it makes me look bad.
I do. It makes me look bad. I help run PR for a con. Don't do this. This is stupid.
Yeah,
God. Yeah, no. It's, this is I cannot begin to even. As yeah. Those kids they say. So, Titan FanCon, we would have never heard of you if you weren't a complete colossal group
bad.
Of morons. Like, they had at least the piece of, they had at least the intelligence to delete the post. I'll say that. I'll give them the credit that, like, at some point, someone said, oh crap, this was really stupid. But don't make the post in the first place, guys.
Uh-huh. That was a bad move. Like, that shouldn't have been something to, that should have needed to be corrected. It just shouldn't. Eh.
Yeah, no, it's, oh.
Let's move on to something else stupid.
Well, is it stupid, or?
I guess this, it's a happy ending to a stupid situation, I guess.
Yeah.
Happy-ish. We'll go with happy-ish. Anyway. We covered Emerald City Comic Con and their bizarre volunteer situation previously. Legality when it comes to volunteering for a for-profit con is always kind of questionable. La-di-da-di-da. And
in
there
the
was
state
a
of Washington,
legal...
it's explicitly illegal.
Yeah, and yeah, so... in the state of Washington, you just can't do it. So there was a class action lawsuit filed against the folks running Emerald City Comic Con. Well, it's been settled. Emerald City is paying out $493,227.84. That number includes the attorney's fees, and that's $5,000 to the plaintiff, and additional funds to pay the administrator to dispense the money. So the people who work for Emerald City Comic Con are going to be getting some compensation for the work they did.
Yeah,
finally,
it's a class action, so it'll depend on how many people apply to get funds,
mm-hmm.
and then the number of people who apply will then be dispersed evenly amongst those who apply to get, you know, the payout.
Mm-hmm.
There's a website for that, which at the very least I'll link in the show notes rather than go look it up right now. This is a weird situation. So the lawsuit was brought, I forget what years, but so when Reed Pop bought Emerald City Comic Con, they started paying their quote-unquote volunteer staff, the minions, immediately. So under Reed Pop's management, they've been in compliance with the law. So the lawsuit covers the last couple of years of Emerald City Comic Con's prior management's the last couple of years it was run by the prior management, but as the company was purchased, Reed Pop is still responsible for the prior legal obligations of the previous owners in the operation of the company. So this is honestly, from what I've heard, is it sounds like the lawsuit was brought on after people realized they should have been paid. Because Washington explicitly outlaws volunteering for for-profit companies. It's a legal gray area in most of the country, but in the state of Washington, there's explicit stuff about this, like in their state law. So it's mostly that when Repop started paying people, you know, to be in compliance, some people started going, "Hey, wait, why did this change? Oh, well, we have to. Oh, wait, I did this work, and I didn't get paid." So the I'm due minimum wage, and so it's a happy ending that they settled that, like, this is
it's as happy as it's going to get anyway, I guess.
Well, I think it's important because there is explicit law in this case. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that's true.
Like, this isn't a situation where a con who was operating a legal gray area, like. Nothing was really decided here for precedence because the law was very explicit in Washington. Like, this isn't case law that's going to affect any of the for-profit company conventions operating in the rest of the country because, again, in most of the country, this is just a gray area. The Department of Labor says it's not okay, but it still hasn't been decided everywhere, and... You know, it's a complicated situation. I think that for-profit conventions probably should be paying their people.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I say that as someone who ran a for-profit con and I didn't pay my people. but if...
But we didn't make any profit.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's true. Oh,
spoilers!
I drove by the so the thing with Living Eau Claire is I drove by the site that was the plaza. I drive by that every day, and it is just really weird because the new hospital's going up, and it's just it is just all construct like it is such a bizarre thing to like different. It's a different view on off of Claremont. It's just weird not having the plaza there anymore, but. Yeah, no, it's like if you want to not pay your volunteers, organize a nonprofit convention. You know, nonprofit conventions can pay their staffers. So, like, you know, you're not going to get rich, but San Diego Comic-Con doesn't have to pay volunteers because they are a registered nonprofit. You know, It's run your convention as a nonprofit. Duh. You know, like, don't get paid. What happens is the people get greedy, and we get into these cash grab cons that, like, I'm not saying all for-profit conventions are cash grab cons. Far from it. I can think of several that are not, for sure. But it's, like, frankly, in some of these areas, it's so easy to organize a social club nonprofit to run a convention that it makes me scratch my head and wonder, I don't know. Just pay your people. Pay your people. If you can't afford to pay your employees, you can't afford to run the business.
Mm-hmm.
It's like... It's really bad in the Comic-Con world. Like, in the anime convention world, yes, there are some for-profit operators that... I can think of a couple, although one of them just had to pivot from being an anime con company to a gaming convention company. But, you know, there are a couple operators, but for the most part, a lot of conventions are operated as nonprofits. Most of them are. The vast majority. You know, you take a look, and... But in the comic world, in the comic convention world, a lot of these shows are run as for-profit shows. And I think those are the ones who are going to be get hit is I think more states are going to clarify their law on this. And it's a backlash against the exploitation of free labor under internships. And, you know, just pay your people. If you can't afford to pay people, don't run a convention.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, in the case of... but that's you see the shift. I mean, obviously, Emerald City, before this lawsuit even was filed, had already shifted to paying its people. Phoenix Comic-Con this year started paying its volunteers. Like, so some of the bigger shows, like, if your show's big enough and profitable enough, you can afford to do it. And, you know, it's just do it. Although Phoenix Comic-Con did try to, like, create a non-profit organization just to manage their volunteers to get around it for about 5 minutes before we all freaked out about it. Yeah. I think we should hit the mailbag, man.
Let's look what's in there. There's got to be something in there.
I see at least one letter, and it's from Langland.
Yay!
Oh, so boy! Great.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Hey, nerds. So I watched Spider-Man Homecoming on Friday night of the opening weekend. Well, I have to say, I'm actually very pleased with the movie. I have had my disappointments with Spider-Man movies in the past, but this one actually stayed very loyal to the web-slinger we love. I like how we are actually going to fully explore his high school life, unlike the last two runs where they pushed to get Peter Parker out of school.
You mean like the comics?
I love the many Easter eggs they threw into this movie, and I liked how well they did the Vulture. I know it wasn't aimed to be an origin story, but this movie did a good job giving brief explanations of the events we're already aware of. No, Trey, you don't have to do a rant about killing of Uncle Ben.
I know! I'm very happy.
Yeah. There is one thing that my younger brother, who might I add is a huge Spidey fan, is still annoyed with. Peter Parker taking off his mask while in the final battle. Still, overall, this was a good movie, and I have said it before, can we please get a Spider-Man movie with Mysterio as the villain? Yeah. I think Mysterio would be awesome. I'm not the only one, because there are blogs and polls all over the internet asking for Mysterio as well. Well, nerds, that's all I got to say. I think this movie was very awesome, and the third one was definitely no charm. Peace out.
I hate Mysterio. Mysterio's dumb. He's got a fishbowl on his head.
We are in a weird spot, though, because Kevin Feige says he doesn't want to reuse Spider-Man villains. And those other five Spider-Man movies burned through like five of them.
I think that's Vulture was a good choice. Oh, I will say, there's one little thing I love about this new Spider-Man movie. During the Marvel logo, which the new Marvel logo takes forever, instead of like the regular Marvel music, they literally played a orchestral version of the 60s Spider-Man theme song. Da 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 da. Like, they literally play that song.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, and also, you don't see the title of the film on screen until the end of the movie.
That's becoming more and more common, I've noticed.
Yeah, like, there's no title screen in this film. Correct me if I'm wrong. Write in, tell me, but I'm pretty certain that we don't see the words Spider-Man Homecoming on screen until the end of the movie. Well, Guardians of the Galaxy shows us the title card right away. You know, with Dancing Baby Groot.
This was,
we talked about this for a long time earlier in the show, and I was like, we didn't need a third Spider-Man reboot, and in many ways, this was all the things I would have hated about, like, a full reboot, like, most things that would have happened in most versions of a reboot we didn't have to watch. So we didn't have an origin story. We just got, like, we know who Spider-Man is. We have Spider-Man. I think the dwelling on high school age Peter Parker, normally I would say I could do without, but okay, so I have a preference for not seeing that. That said, they are executing it well. So it's like, I still like it. It's like, you're really in the mood for a steak, but someone served you delicious lobster instead. Like, it wasn't what you wanted, but it's still really good.
Mm-hmm. I can live with that. Yeah. That sounds good. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah. So
someday.
Like I said, it didn't leave me, like, when I left Wonder Woman, I was like, oh my God, that was amazing. Even though, like, I mean, there are many flaws in the film. I'll say, like, there are fewer flaws in this film. There are fewer flaws in Spider-Man Homecoming than there are in Wonder Woman. But I left Wonder Woman being like, this was amazing, while I left Spider-Man Homecoming going, that was pretty good.
I'm excited for it. So, I mean, I like Spider-Man, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what I was down to.
Yeah. No, it's a worthy successor.
Okay.
Speaking of worthy success, I don't know. If we got to go on to the Vomit at Steve Challenge. The Vomit at Steve Challenge is the part of the show in which I read a segment of a book. And the challenge to you, our dear listener, is to guess what book I am reading from. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, we put your name on the Hall of Awesome on our website. 2, I read your name aloud during this segment of the show. 3, nothing, but I feel compelled to say a third thing. The current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. I feel like I forgot to add the newest... I forgot to add Fee to the list, didn't I? Well, okay, so... Fee, who I forgot to put on the list, on the website, who I will add later, or Sakura Sansa... I haven't found out how she wants to be listed yet. I need to go check that. So it either Fee or Sakura Sunset, depending on which version of her name she wants on the website. Arkham, Izero, Rainian, Senti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings, Bancor, Fan Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Soros, Paper Godzilla, Kavzi, Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, and Keith Shizuo. And I'm quite sorry, Fee. I will get your name on the website. As
one way or another.
This is what happens when people guess correctly while I'm moving. All right, so we've been reading from the same book for, this will be the second episode with this book. And so your line from the current book is, again, I answered, yes. If you know a book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact and tell us. Or if you have anything else you'd like to say, do, tell us about, scream about, explain to us your opinion on... the exact timbre of Nick's voice and why Gen is somehow eating your brain with her mind thoughts and consuming your true self and becoming you slowly but surely and taking over your life. Just go ahead and go to nerdandtie.com/contact and let us know, and we will find you a probably psychiatrist. But yeah.
Well... I don't even know how to follow that up. Sure, whatever.
I do. I'll just, like, call our names out, and we can end the show. How about that?
Sounds good.
Maybe.
Sincerely yours, I've been Gen Proc.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And someday I might be Nick Izumi.
And you have been listening to Nerd and Tie.
Also, remember, you can subscribe to this show on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher. Stitcher, that's a thing. Anything can take an RSS reader. Remember to rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. And tell your friends. You can also subscribe to the video version of this podcast when it happens, unlike this episode, at... youtube.com/TRAEGORN, because I don't feel like changing my URL. You can also find Nick Izumi's videos at youtube.com/Nick Izumi. His videos that appear on the site are on that YouTube channel. You can also subscribe to both myself and Nick have Patreon accounts. Mine is patreon.com/TRAEGORN, and Nick's is patreon.com/Nick Izumi. And you can support our videos, the production of this podcast, and other things. You can also find Gen's work on the internet under the name Ocelot Dude. Just Google Ocelot Dude and find some pillows and prints and neat things to help Gen eat. And remember, we are here for you. We are pulling for you. We are in your mind, in your soul, slowly dreaming of a world in which you actually exist.
The dreamer has awakened.
This is, things got a little weird, but I think at this point everything always gets a little weird at the end of the show, right? I mean, that's
keep
just...
on sparking in the free world. I forgot to do that.
Well, you did it now.
Oh, good.